I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. If you have been watching the markets, you must be seasick because there's been a lot of movement over the last week and a half as the new administration tries to solidify their trade policy. And the market has certainly been whipsawed in the process. At one point in time, we saw the market down, or actually globally, we had lost around $10 trillion in market capitalization. And now the market seems to have rebounded somewhat since the president has moderated his trade policy. And I wanted to get an expert on to explain to you and me what is happening on Wall Street right now. So I invited my good friend, Theodore Hicks, is the chief investment officer for Hicks and Associates Wealth Management, based right here in Cary, North Carolina. And this is also his first visit to the Locked In Show. So we want to give him a warm welcome. Theodore, thank you for locking in. How are you, man?
I'm very good, Algernon. Thanks for inviting me. And I hope I don't bore you so much that you'll maybe invite me back another time.
I don't think there's an investment manager in America that is boring at this moment in time in this season. You all are rock stars at the moment. Everyone wants to talk to their investment manager and understand how to navigate some of the topsy-turviness that we're seeing in the markets right now. But before we get to that, because we're going to get to the market, and I know my audience is anxious to hear your thoughts about what's happening on Wall Street and how that might proliferate to Main Street. But before we do that, let's start with just talking about your firm. Give us a little history on Hicks and Associates, how long it's been around, and maybe what you specialize in.
So that's a great question. I'll give you the Reader's Digest condensed version. I started my practice in 1999, right out of college. So I graduated from NC State in December 98, got licensed, got in the business, joined the America's largest financial planning firm. And financial planning and personal, when you're working with the average John and Jane Q public, financial planning also becomes asset management. Well, we go through the dot-com crisis, so worst bear market in 40 years. And the leaders of my firm, you know, said, well, don't worry. This is a once in a career type of event. You'll be through it. It's good to have this type of thing over at the beginning of your career. All right, good. I'll survive. Well, then you fast forward to the global financial crisis of 2008, and don't worry, this is a once in a career type of event. Wait a minute, you guys said that already. So the reality is around that time, I really started to realize that the skill sets of a financial planner and a portfolio manager are two distinctly different skill sets. And so ever since the global financial crisis, I really have focused my practice on asset management. Yes, we do financial planning for clients when it's appropriate, but most of the time it is financial planning for people that are getting really close to retirement and they're just a little anxious to have I really accumulated enough? Well, anyway, my practice really focuses on managing assets. And, you know, one of my life verses, Algernon, is Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, working under the Lord, not under man. So that's our philosophy when we're managing money for people. We want to manage it with excellence. And one of the things that really has bothered me over the years is that, you know, going into the dot-com crisis and the global financial crisis, I was doing all the things all the academics tell you to do. And it was through those two experiences that my eyes, the scales, if we can use that term, the scales fell from my eyes. And I finally started to realize that so much of what is preached in this industry and in academia is just flat out wrong. So that's how we are different. We're managing money in a different manner.
You know, Theodore, I appreciate that introduction. Many in my audience will not be aware of this, but I actually started my career at Solomon Smith Barney. So I used to be a wealth banker, Theodore. And when I got out of college, it was 2001, and worst time ever to be a wealth banker and trying to open investment accounts. And my managing director told me, he said, you know, you're a smart guy. You should pursue a career in real estate. And I started doing some research and decided to pivot. And I went into real estate investment banking, and that would have been around 2004 or five. And we can all remember what happened a few short years after that, which was the 2009 credit crisis. And so, like you, I think the past 25 years, we've seen several life-altering events, including COVID, and now this sort of turmoil that we see in the markets currently. You know, I want to start there because I want to get your reaction. You're intelligent. You've been around a while. You and I've had some offline conversations. I know you're involved with the John Locke Foundation, which I'm a huge fan of. This particular turmoil that we're going through in the market, what stands out to me that's different than the other periods in history that we just mentioned, this appears to be more self-induced. It's like we caused it. What's your reaction to that?
To some extent, I would say yes. To some extent, I would say the market was already forecasting somewhat of a pullback. If you look underneath the surface, the market was weak towards the end of last year in particular. But yeah, I would certainly contend that there's some of this is definitely self-induced. And this is where I will say that the stock market is the world's greatest macroeconomist, right? The stock market is going to do what the stock market does. And it looks into the future and tries to discount what's actually happening or what's likely to happen, et cetera. And so the reality is that apparently President Trump believes that the international trade needs to be reset and it's not working in our favor. Well, I'll admit I am not an international trade expert. But if that's true, then I guess that's why he's pursuing this policy. And Algernon, I'm an avid reader. This weekend, I finished Chernow's book on Ulysses Grant, fascinating book. And in the very beginning of the book, he tells a story about how a young Ulysses wanted to buy a horse from a neighbor down the road. And the neighbor wanted $25 for it, but his dad would only allow $20. So Ulysses convinced his dad to help him get the horse. And Ulysses' father, Jesse told Ulysses, you can go offer him $20. If he won't take $22, then you can offer him as much as $25. So Ulysses went down the street and told his neighbor, my dad said I'm to offer you $20 for your horse. If you won't take that, then I'm to offer you $22. And if you still won't take that, I'm to go as high as $25. Well, what do you think he bought the horse for? 25. And so my point is, you know, whether you love Trump or you don't love Trump, it's irrelevant. He's the president. And what's happened in the stock market, it's not really important. Our job is to manage through this. And if he's really trying to reset the trade, international trade, he can't go to the international market and say, well, I'm willing to offer you 20, maybe 22, but no more than 25. He's going to negotiate strong. I don't particularly like how this is being transpired, but that's what I think could be happening. But the reality is from our portfolios, when we're managing money for clients, it doesn't matter why the stock market is going down. It doesn't matter who caused it. It doesn't matter if it's self-induced or not. We still have a responsibility to act as a fiduciary and act in our client's best interest. Because as you and I, and probably so many people know, hopefully, you know, the Great Depression started with the trade war. So is it possible that this gets worse? Yes, it's possible. Is it possible that it's a really long bear market? Yes. I'm not predicting any of that, but I simply am not going to sit around and wait.
Yeah. You know, the tariff rates that the president has floated are even higher than the rates that were implemented from the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act. So these are the highest tariff rates we've seen. I think they said in 105 years. So it's going to be interesting how we navigate through it. And I would agree with you, Theodore. I think we have to always understand. I'm an avid reader as well. My favorite book, and my audience knows this, is Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Stephen Covey does a great job talking about the circle of influence versus the circle of concern. Amen. And there are so many things that we're concerned about, but are beyond our influence and beyond what we can control. So I totally agree with you. But I also agree that the thing that's causing so much mental pain and strife for me is that the approach and the strategy, if you want to say there is a strategy, It's just the rollout of this has been very messy. Even over the weekend, you know, the president comes out and says that they're exempting phones and TVs and chips and all these devices. But then they come out today and they say, no, that's not exactly what we mean. This is what we're doing. So it's causing this sort of a whipsaw effect, which can be very dangerous for the largest and most wealthiest economy, you know, on the planet. With that said, with some of the changes that you've seen happen over the last couple of weeks, are there any particular trends that you're watching closely that could have a direct impact on United States investors?
Well, as it relates to investors, I would argue the trends that we're watching, and right before we went on the air, I'm shooting my video for my YouTube channel because I'm trying to keep clients updated on what's going on and things of this nature. And so when we have a massive rally like we did last Wednesday, I think last Wednesday was the eighth best day in U.S. stock market history. That doesn't mean that the worst is behind us. And so what I'm looking for and what I talk about in today's video that I'm shooting is we're looking for some confirmation. We're looking for what we refer to as a follow through day. And so what we want to see is we want to see that the selling stops. I might sound like Dr. Seuss here. In order for the rain to start stopping, the rain has to stop starting or something like that. I don't remember how he said it, but you know what I'm saying. So in order for this to really stop going down, it's got to stop going down. And I know that's overly simplistic, but that's the reality is the stock market has got to level out and we have to see some dampening volatility. The last I looked, the VIX is still very well elevated. So investors right now are still anticipating increased volatility.
Yeah, no, I think we're all looking for that floor and you know, that bounce moment. But, you talk about the best trading day, eighth best trading day in U.S. history. We saw obviously a bull run within the stock market, but we did continue to see yields rising more on the bond side. And I don't have the president's ear and I haven't been invited to the Oval Office to interview him. But many have come out and said that what caused him to pull back with the tariff or the trade policy was the turmoil happening in the bond market. For us that don't follow this as closely as you do, Theodore, you're watching this day by day. Explain to us what occurred in the bond market that would have caused the president to make the shift. And then also maybe catch us up on what you're seeing in the bond market now that the shift has occurred.
Well, the bond market, when the yields and interest rates or interest rates and bond prices are inversely related. And so last week, what was happening is, well, first of all, this is one of those classic examples of academia tells everybody that if you're not really going to be a risky investor, you should just increase your allocation to bonds because bonds are less volatile than stocks. That wasn't true last week. Last week, the bond market was down like 10% based upon some of the sectors in the bond market. And so there's a lot of argument that the bond market is actually more sophisticated than the stock market. And the people that are investing in the bonds, not bond mutual funds, but the actual bonds, are far more sophisticated. And so that's really what was happening is we're trying to take a look at the bond yields. And if the president is going to do this, there's a very strong possibility now that we're going to have a recession. The last I looked at the Atlanta Federal Reserve's GDP Now tool, it's forecasting negative 1.8% GDP in the first quarter. Now, they have since come out with a modification, but it's still a very negative number. And when we have this much uncertainty, we saw the same thing during the advancement of the Obamacare laws back in, I guess, 2009. There was so much uncertainty about what the president then was trying to do that the wise businessman, the wise consumer said, you know what, maybe I will just hold off on launching that new manufacturing plant, or maybe I won't go on vacation because if this is going to be such a massive, massive change, I don't know what it's going to be. There's a strong argument that the stock market actually prefers divided government. Right now, we've got Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican White House. And back in 2008 and 2009, you had straight Democrats. And so when one party can make big changes, that creates a lot of uncertainty. And so I think what the bond market was suggesting is that if we're going to go down this road, then we might very well have to go into a recession. Well, historically, and this is the interesting thing, historically, you go into recession, you see the Federal Reserve pulling back on the interest rates. They're going to lower the interest rates. But are we convinced? I'm not. Are we convinced that we've really won the battle with inflation? I'm not yet convinced that we've won that battle. And so Chairman Powell has kept the interest rates higher. Well, which one of those two battles is going to win out? Are we going to lower interest rates because we're going to go into recession? Or no, we're going to keep interest rates higher because we still have to contain inflation. And I think the bond market was simply saying that they don't like the uncertainty of what this Trump tariff war is going to do to the economy.
Yeah, you talk about one party being in role. This is more like one person is actually in role, because Congress really isn't necessarily being consulted on a lot of the things that's occurring, which is also part of, I had John Hood on the show last week talking about the new Trump term. And I think that's where John and I really agree, that part of the consternation here is that Congress is completely out of the loop. It's just one single branch of government, the executive branch, that's really making all these decisions. Jamie Dimon and Larry Summers both came out last week and said they both believe we are in recession. Some of the CEOs that they talked to as well. And I think, Theodore, as well, we saw some geopolitical type issues going on where Japan started selling bonds. There's been some rumors that the Chinese are starting to dump bonds. How much of this trade policy where we're tariffing our international partners could start to play into the actual bond and stock market? I mean, a lot of these foreign countries, these big trade deficits that we run with these countries, they don't just stick it under their mattress. They come and buy our bonds and they buy our stocks.
Yeah, I would say you're already seeing it. I think you're already seeing the uncertainty that of a trade war. And I think you're already seeing that in the stock and the bond market. And again, that's why we do what we do, because we don't know how long is this going to take. Again, I can make a case of why Trump is doing what he's doing and why he did it as fast as he did it. I mean, the first 100 days of his administration, good grief. I mean, it's been a whirlwind. I could make a case for it. But the flip side is, from my job in terms of managing wealth of other individuals, I don't really have a choice to prognosticate or guess where the market is going to go. I've got to react. And again, are there enough leaders across the world that are going to call Trump's bluff and they're going to push back and fight back? And it's not going to be as easy as Trump thinks it's going to be. And that's going to cause a meltdown in the stock market and or the bond market, far worse than any. I have no idea. And so, again, that's why we don't prognosticate. We're not making guesses. We're just following the stock charts. We're following the prices. We're following every day, and we zig and we zag and we make adjustments constantly.
You got to go with the flow. Yes. You got to be like water. No resistance.
Just
move with it. You've said the word uncertainty quite a bit. Yeah. And I joked with John last week on the show. And for my audience, if you missed the episode with John Hood, who is the president of the John William Pope Foundation, go over to the YouTube channel, or hopefully you're subscribed to the podcast. Great conversation that we had last week. But uncertainty is becoming the word of 2025. I think I've heard it 100 times here in the last couple of weeks or so. In a season of global uncertainty, what asset classes do you think are the safe havens now?
Cash.
Cash. All right. Simple answer there.
Yeah.
Well, so, that's my last name. I always say cash is king.
There you go. So I have a video on my channel called Cash is King. At least that's the thumbnail. It's from a week or two ago. So Algernon, the reality is, well, first of all, that's a decent segue. So I think you know that I'm releasing a book in the next 6 or 7 weeks. I'm still not certain when exactly it's coming out. My work is done. I'm just waiting on the experts to make sure it's as polished as I can possibly get it. The title of my book is Evidence-Based Investing. And my point of that is, I don't want to prognosticate that Trump is going to win or Trump is going to lose, or that interest rates are going to do this, or Japan is going to do that, or China. I don't want to prognosticate that. I'm going to look for the evidence and what trends are working right now. Well, there's not a lot of them. That's the reality. And again, this is counter to everything you ever heard in academia about the stock market, and counter to everything you hear in any of the licensing and certifications. It's all asset allocation. It's all diversification. And the reality is that is not always true. It is sometimes true, but it is not true right now. And so right now, cash is king. Am I telling everybody to go stick your money in a CD and lock it up for 12 months? No, I would not do that. But, we would say, Jack, be nimble, Jack, be quick. You know, if the trend changes, trend with it. Right now, the bonds look like they might have found a bottom. Well, I said that 3 weeks ago. So maybe they haven't. We're looking for the evidence. Right now, the evidence does not suggest the short term is very good. And again, that's the subtitle of my book. In order to invest well for the long term, sometimes you need to survive the short term. And right now, the short term says cash is king. How long is that going to be true? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm encouraging my clients, my partners, my investors, and my audience to look at hard assets as well, things like real estate. They do well for the type of environment that we could potentially be going into. I personally believe, Theodore, I wrote a blog about this about a week ago. I think that we are really in danger of entering some type of a stagflation. I think the Federal Reserve doesn't have quite the number of tools that they had during 2020 because we weren't dealing with the inflation issue. So they're going to be really hamstrung to be able to get in this year and try to address any of the concerns that we're seeing right now. And we could be heading towards stagflation. What's your reaction to that?
I've been talking about stagflation for about 3 years. Okay. So stagflation, for those that don't understand what it is, it's reduced economic growth in a period of higher inflation. And that's what we saw in 22. And I've also been talking about the distinct possibility. Again, I'm not forecasting. One of our big models is I don't predict, we prepare. So when I say this, I'm not predicting, but it is entirely possible that we are in a secular, not cyclical, secular, which means long-term. It is entirely possible that we are in a secular bear market. And I would have said that even last November and December when we're pushing all-time highs. This is, again, I talk about this in my book. You can make all-time highs and still be in a secular bear market. And if we're going to have policies like we have right now, where it's announced and it's implemented immediately, and then a week later it's changed, that's not a very conducive environment for making business decisions. And those business decisions are what drive the stock market. So I think it is entirely possible that we are in this stagflation. And we've also been talking about the very distinct possibility of being in a recession. I said that on my YouTube channel about a month ago, 2 months ago, something like that. So yeah, fun times.
What's your reaction to, I won't say that I'm a fan or not a fan of crypto. I'll just be honest. I've admitted to my audience before, I don't fully understand it. I was sitting with a banker about 2 weeks ago, and this banker was full on crypto and actually gave me a good 1 hour tutorial on why he believes everything is heading in this direction. While I've got you here, I mean, help my audience and me understand crypto. Is that something we should be looking harder at in 2025?
I would say the same. It's the same answer about any other asset class. We're going to look at the trend. I'm not what we refer to as a maximalist. I believe that crypto is the greatest thing since sliced bread. I think crypto has largely become a distinct asset class, but I would also argue it's irrelevant. If you are investing in crypto the way that people used to invest in gold or silver, because the end is coming and we're going to have economic Armageddon, anytime that conversation comes up, I always ask I'll ask you, did you see the movie, The Book of Eli?
Yeah.
So do you remember that? For those that don't remember, it's kind of an Armageddon type of a scenario. And Denzel Washington, who's one of my favorite actors.
Toothpaste was like money.
So that's not the one that I was thinking of. You know, what else did he use to barter?
They were using all kinds of things from what I remember. Yeah.
Chick-fil-A wet naps. Remember back in the day when Chick-fil-A used to give you the wet nap?
Yeah.
He was using Chick-fil-A wet naps and batteries for barter. So anytime somebody says we're going to have to, we should have some gold or silver in the vault because of something like that, that's my response. So is Bitcoin a solution to that? It's possible. And if you want to put something like that in your portfolio, go right ahead. But from our standpoint, if crypto is in a positive trend, I'm interested. If it's not in a positive trend, I could care less.
I love that response. I was telling this banker, the toughest thing I have with it, Ted, is I don't like, what can you use it for? I can't walk into a restaurant and buy a pizza with it. I can't even buy Coca-Cola with it. So I just struggle to really understand it as an asset class.
Well, so I have, there's several books on the shelf behind me on crypto because I get so many questions about it and I'm trying to understand it more and more. And while I would say I think I understand it more than most people, I'm still not an expert on it, but I would agree with you. There are places where you can spend crypto, but those places, it's a very, very short list of places where you can actually use crypto. So in my view, it's then if that remains to be true, crypto is no different than baseball trading cards.
But it feels like definitely those meme coins. I've told my clients and investors, stay away from those things. Those are worthless. Now, I will agree with this banker. I think in terms of facilitating overseas payments, crypto could be really interesting, sort of providing that middle piece between, you know, if I wanted to transfer money to someone in Japan or Germany or something like that. But beyond that, it doesn't seem like they've figured out a day-to-day utility for it.
Well, the thing that gets me a little concerned is when we talk about CBDCs, not just Bitcoin and crypto, it's the CBDC is a central bank digital currency. That from an economic and free market system, that's where I get a lot more concerned if we go down that road. That road is where the central bank, in other words, the United States government, controls the digital currency, and they could turn it off anytime they wanted. That I get a lot more concerned when we start talking about that.
Got one final question before I let you go. This show goes fast. I sometimes I think I need to do like a Joe Rogan 2-hour show or something to be able to get fully into it. But
Sure. You know,
I was having a conversation with my mom, and you know, through this market turmoil, she lost a lot of money. Well, hasn't lost money because she hasn't realized the losses, but she's looking at that statement. She's looking at that account, and it's went down quite a bit. And I think for a lot of people over the last couple of weeks, they're wrestling with that. Some of these people aren't as sophisticated as you, Theodore, right? Like, they're going to jump out of the market when they see it sinking, not realizing that, you know, to stay in and dollar cost averaging and all these different techniques and strategies you could use. For those people that are nearing retirement, like maybe they were going to retire this year, any advice for them on how they should be navigating the market or looking at their portfolio allocations? Any advice besides calling Hicks and Associates and opening an account with you?
Yeah. So the reality is, and again, I was shooting my YouTube video today, and I decided to get out this from my truck. This is bear spray. And so the cliche is, you know, you have bear spray before you need it, right? Once you see the bear, it's too late to go get it. Yeah. And so our conviction is that managing a portfolio of assets, there needs to be some sort of strategy. You cannot, or you should not, that's not true, because you can, and it's just a bad idea. You should not be managing your portfolio based upon fear. You should not manage your portfolio based upon what Algernon said on his podcast. You should not be based on what Joe Rogan said on his podcast, or what Donald Trump said from the White House, or Jerome Powell said from the podium. That is a fool's errand. There needs to be a lot more strategical thought as to what are you going to do? There's absolutely no doubt that a buy and hold strategy can work over the long haul. But to your point, what if you are retiring next year? Well, the question is, do you, or if you've hired somebody, does a portfolio manager have a defensive strategy? You know, we live in basketball country, right? And so I guess we just got done with basketball season, and now we're into, I still don't understand how hockey postseason is into April and May. I still haven't quite figured that out. But it's not just offense. You have to have defense, and you have to know, when do you put the defensive players on the team? And then likewise, part of the debate that we're having now is it time to put the offensive players back on the field already? Well, I guess the short answer to your question is if you don't know, then just riding it out might very well be the answer. But if you're not at peace with that, then you need to start interviewing people that can actually help you navigate that process. And this, Algernon, is part of the reason I wrote my book. I'm certainly hoping prospective clients read my book and reach out to me. But I also wrote the book to try to challenge the investment community to say, well, you learned about Markowitz and you can tell me the talking points for Markowitz's theory, but have you ever questioned it? Have you ever looked at it to say, does this actually make sense? So I'll close with this. Acts 17:11 is another one of my favorite Bible quotes. It's the believers in Berea were more noble than the Thessalonians, for they searched scripture daily to see if what Paul said was true. So I would say that's true of anybody, no matter if you're sitting in a school classroom or you're sitting in a boardroom or you're listening to Jerome Powell or Algernon Cass or President Trump, question what you're being told. Do some due diligence and research to see if this really makes sense. So perhaps a longer answer than you wanted.
No, I'm always encouraging my audience to be a critical thinker. Don't accept what I share on face value. Always dig a little deeper. And like anything else, the way you see the world might not be identical to the way Theodore and I see the world. And so you have to align based on your own perspective. Theodore, you've mentioned your YouTube channel a couple times. Tell my audience how they can find that.
It's at Hicks-Associates. Hicks, Hicks-Associates is how you can find it on YouTube. That's also my website, by the way. Hicks-Associates.
I encourage my audience to go find the website and find the YouTube channel and become a subscriber, because Theodore is sharing content and insight almost on a daily basis. So this is a great way for you to learn and connect with him. And then Theodore, on the book, is there a way to sort of pre-register? Can we go to Amazon and get on a list or get a notification for when it's ready?
So that you can, if you go to TheodoreHicks.com, you can sign up to get notified when I launch the book. This is the first time I've ever published a book. So I'm in the unknown area where I don't know what I'm doing. That's why I'm working with an organization to help me make sure it's as successful as possible. But if people go to TheodoreHicks.com, there's a spot where they can sign up and I'll send out a notice once the book is ready. But we're getting close.
Well, I encourage my audience to do that as well. And Theodore, if you'll get me a copy of the book, we'd love to have you back on the show. We'll review the book together and help my audience to understand some of the market insights that you're providing. As always, Theodore, I appreciate you locking in. And to my audience, I always appreciate you locking in with me. Make sure you stay tuned to WTOB, because every Sunday morning, that's where you can lock in. But if you happen to miss me there, hopefully you are subscribed to the podcast. You can get that on Spotify, Pandora, Apple, wherever you like to get your favorite podcast. You can always lock in there. And of course, until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC. The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.